Morning is number 093084, United States versus Huang.
May it please the court, Chris Aberley for Mr. Huang. As this court undoubtedly knows by now, that the U.S. Supreme Court in Carr very recently held that SORNA does not impose criminal liability on a sex offender who fails to register pursuant to interstate travel that occurred prior to the effective date of the statute. The question that Carr left open expressly, and which is now before this court, is whether the effective date for persons like Mr. Huang is the enactment date of the statute, July 27, 2006, or no sooner than February 28, 2007, when the Attorney General declared that the statute applied to all sex offenders convicted prior to the enactment date. Now, the First, Eighth, and Tenth Circuits.
Why shouldn't we just flip a coin?
Well,
I mean, I consider this a very vexing question.
One reason not to flip a coin is because
we're not allowed.
Yes, and you've got the First, Eighth, and Tenth Circuits holding that the effective date is the enactment date. But on the other hand, you've got the Fourth, the Sixth, the Seventh, the Eleventh, and district courts in the Third and Ninth Circuits holding that the enactment, the effective date is July 28th or later.
July 27th.
July 27th. No, I think it's July, July 20th.
February
28th,
2000. July 27th.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Mr. Huang, of course, urges the court to follow the greater number of circuits in this case.
Mr. Everly, let's get to the crux of this case. It seems to me there's three phases or three elements of the case. Number one, someone who's qualified to register. What's the wording that's used? Is required to register under CERNA. That person has to travel, and then knowingly fails to register or update a registration. In this particular case, it is clear that your client failed to register after the effective date, traveled after the effective date of the statute.
He did not travel after. The question is, when is the effective date?
Well, I mean, the effective date of the statute. I'm not talking about the AG regulation.
The date of the enactment, yes.
And those two are correct. After the effective date of the statute, he both traveled and failed to register.
He traveled after July 27, 2006.
Wonderful. Are you contending that that because he was required to register before July 27th, that prohibits prosecution in this case?
We are arguing that because he did not travel after February 28th, he was not required to register.
Okay.
The question is one of statutory construction, specifically what is meant by the first clause of 16913D, which states that the Attorney General shall have the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements of SORNA to sex offenders convicted before July 27th.
Well, but he is first. I mean, I don't understand why some of the other circuits have not focused on the title of that section. That seems to explain exactly why the AG's why that section is needed and why you need to have a regulation, and that is that there are certain individuals who could not have registered because in that particular state there was no compulsion to register, and therefore could not comply with the first part of the statute. And it only focuses on those individuals and not every individual, and not specifically your client, who did in fact register within 3 days of his leaving prison. and was, in fact, subject to SORNA, it seems to me, on July 27th.
Well, of course,
I'm making a lot of assumptions here, but
well, the first date, the 10 circuits do look, of course, at the title of the subchapter, which is entitled Initial Registration of Sex Offenders Unable to Comply with Subsection B of this section. Now, those circuits argue that the title defines the scope of the statutory text. Mm-hmm. The problem is the text simply does not cannot be read to have that limitation. And the Supreme Court in 1947 in Brotherhood of Railroad Workers versus B&O, it's a wonderful discussion of when you can look at the title to get any meaning from it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that is the general rule. But tell me why it makes sense to have that section there if it's not only for those who could not comply with other portions of the statute. What other reason would you have it? And is there any other statute that even remotely comes close to something like this, language like this?
Well, I'm not sure that there is.
In other words, when I was thinking about this, I can't think of any other rationale except the rationale that the title seems to give, and that is that it's limited to those individuals who could not have complied with the registration prior to the statute.
It says the registration in the above, in B, which requires you to register while you're in prison or 3 business days after you sentence when you don't get a sentence.
Well,
so, I mean, nobody can comply with that who's already been sentenced and served this sentence.
Right, but and, of course, there's an enormous number of pre-SORNA sex offenders who are in prison and can comply with this section.
The defendant in this case could not comply with the provisions of Section B of that statute.
That is correct. He would, in the second clause of the statute, which delegates the authority to create rules of registration, he falls into the category of persons unable to comply with the statute. But, you know, in that subsection, there's also, in addition to that group, there is stated without qualification persons convicted prior to the enactment date. And in the first clause, there is no restriction whatsoever on the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements. And Judge Garza asked, well, what purpose does that serve? And we would argue that Congress may very well have thought there are a lot of problems that could arise from applying this statute, both constitutional problems and interpretive problems, to persons who were already convicted on the date the statute was enacted.
But Congress cannot give up its authority to legislate to the Attorney General. And that to me is, in my view, it seems to me that they cannot, your interpretation by necessity leads to an abrogation of Congress's exclusive right to legislate. And that is to include these people or not to include these people. And as I understand the entire statute, Congress was giving the Attorney General the power to create rules in order to allow this, you know, to allow an alternative to this initial registration, because it would be different, I guess, throughout the United States, and they didn't want to get into it, I presume. I mean,
it definitely does.
Why, if it's this confusing and this ambiguous, it is a criminal statute that cannot apply to send this man to prison because nobody understands it.
Well,
I mean,
I have,
everybody's arguing about what it
well,
means.
Well, two responses. One of the arguments, of course, is whether or not it is ambiguous.
You know. It must be. Everybody's arguing about the title and what it means.
Well, but my first response is, the Attorney General shall have the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements of this subchapter to sex offenders convicted before July 27th. This court in U.S. versus Young decided in October of last year, said, if I can find it,
Congress left it to the Attorney General's discretion whether SORNA would apply to sex offenders convicted before the Act's passage.
That's what the court said. Now, if this court were to regard that as binding Fifth Circuit law, then Mr. Hong his conviction has to be reversed. But of course, the effective date was not critical in that case. It's not a holding. But the fact that this court so casually came to that conclusion, in our opinion, is reflective of just how crystal clear this part of the statute is. To the extent that it is ambiguous, of course.
Did you happen to look at the government's brief in that case? Quote, SORNA imposed a duty to register beginning on the date of the Attorney General's retroactivity determination, February 28, and a violation of the Act only occurred thereafter, close quote.
They've
that
conceded.
Was the government's position.
The government said that?
Yep. That was then.
But getting back to Judge Garza's point, Congress could have been concerned with persons, whether they were pre-SORNA or post-SORNA, who could not comply with subsection B. But they could also have been concerned, and I think this is reflected in the statute, with persons generally who were convicted prior to SORNA. After all, the Supreme Court has already addressed, had to take on the constitutionality and interpretation of this statute as applied to pre-SORNA offenders in Carr. And it seems eminently reasonable that Congress's intent was to take these potential problems and dump them in the lap of the Attorney General to sort them out and apply them in the best way that they could to that group of persons.
What if you read subsection D?
Yes.
The first thing it says has the authority to specify the applicability of requirements of this subchapter to offenders convicted before the enactment of this chapter, or its implementation in a particular jurisdiction. Now, it seems to me what you're saying is that's the essence of what is happening in that subsection, and the other circuits have indicated that. But then the next sentence, it seems to me, is a more specific, and it says to prescribe rules for registration of any of such sex offenders and for other categories of such sex offenders who are unable to comply with subsection B of this section. Now, it is your client could comply with subsection B, and did in fact comply with subsection B. When he left prison, Louisiana, or I guess New Orleans, he had registered as a sex offender in this state.
That is correct. Okay. Yes, and what the statute does is it delegates two types of authority. And in the first authority, it includes this large group. And in the second delegation of authority, it includes the large group and the smaller group. Or if the statute's ambiguous, it only includes the smaller group. But that ambiguity does not infect the first clause, which is quite clear. And to the notion that Congress would have, you know, left it to the Attorney General to decide whether or not this large group of sex offenders should be excluded from a statute that is supposed to be comprehensive, our answer to that is the statute doesn't say we delegate to the Attorney General whether or not it should apply. It says we delegate to the Attorney General to the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements. And we think that that suggests that Congress certainly anticipated that the Attorney General would do something, but would determine the manner and the nature of how SORNA would apply to that group of people.
Well, it says, it goes on, because it says, to sex offenders convicted before the enactment of this chapter or its implementation in a particular jurisdiction. And it seems to me that it is trying to address the different states that had sex offender registration requirements, and frankly, those who did not, and gave the AG that rulemaking authority, and then specifically those who could not, you know, comply with the initial registration of subsection B. You may be right. I mean, we're just going to have to look at this a little bit.
I think it does several things, and then the title only describes one of them. Why it did so, it's not clear, but you don't need to reach that question if there's sufficient, if it's sufficient clarity in the part of the statute we're trying to construe. And as I said, because it's not unreasonable that Congress would have done this, the ambiguity should favor the defendant under the rule of lenity. One last point. In our reply brief, we withdrew the ex post facto argument. Upon further consideration, we would also withdraw the third argument regarding whether the rule was properly promulgated. After reading Carr, and in light of the facts of this case, we don't believe that issue is applicable any longer. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. You have time for rebuttal. All right. Ms. Bayreuth.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Helena Dayreuth, and I represent the United States. Subsection 16913D doesn't apply to the defendant. He was required to register in Louisiana before he was released from prison in 2005, and he was given written notification of his obligation to keep his registration current. He further was required to register in Texas one day after SORNA was enacted, and he also was given written notification of his obligation to keep his registration current. The defendant mistakenly relies upon subsection 16913D. His contention is not supported by the plain text of the statute. When looking at, there are two clauses in subsection that was already discussed in subsection D. And the first clause, which he relies upon, says the Attorney General shall have the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements of the title to pre-SORNA sex offenders. In preparing for oral argument last night, I recognized the importance of the language that Congress used. And Congress said, gave the discretion, it wasn't a mandate, that the Attorney General had the authority. If Congress wanted to issue a mandate, like it did in Section 16912, where it said the Attorney General shall issue guidelines and regulations to interpret this title, if Congress wanted to let the Attorney General make the determination whether SORNA applied to pre-SORNA sex offenders, it would have used different language. And also, Congress used the word to specify, to give further detail. Congress did not use the word, they most likely would have probably used the word determine if they were leaving it up to the Attorney General to make a determination whether SORNA applied to pre-SORNA sex offenders. The defendant in this case is reading the subsection just in a vacuum, and we don't believe that that is the proper way to read the statute.
But it did authorize the Attorney General in that last sentence to prescribe rules for registration for those sex offenders unable to comply with subsection B. That is specific.
Yes, Your Honor, that's specific. And as the court is well aware, the circuits are split on the interpretation of subsection B, D. And because the statute is ambiguous, as the Supreme Court has stated, and
but Ms.
Darius.
Yes, Ms. Darius. We don't even get to this with this defendant because it is clear that he registered in Texas a day after the effective date of the statute. He registered in Texas. So when he subsequently came to Louisiana, he was under that statute, was he not, completely?
Yes, Your Honor. And Your Honor, that is correct. Because the defendant was already registered as a sex offender and updated his registration, you don't even get to D, which has that provision that the defendant is relying upon.
And it is clear, I mean, here, that, you know, to me, this whole thing revolves around whether the first prong, the first element, whether or not he was required to register as a sex offender under SORNA, and because he clearly traveled after the effective date of the statute, and he clearly failed to register after the effective date of the statute, July 27th. Now, we get back to subsection D. If, in fact, subsection D provides the effective date of the regulations, provide any type of either additional force or force of statute that see, I don't understand how you can have a statutory effective date and then have some type of regulation that in fact delays the effective date of that statute until regulations are promulgated, at least not under the wording of this particular subsection D.
Yes.
So let me ask you, if Judge Garza is correct, if that provision is unconstitutional delegation of authority to the Attorney General, what does that do to this conviction?
Well, Your Honor, we submit that it's not giving unconstitutional authority to the Attorney General.
I know, but I'm saying that's what Judge Garza, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I mean that's an implication of what he is saying, is that it's unconstitutional, and if it is, and that's removed from the statute, what does that do to the conviction of this individual?
Well, Your Honor, if Judge Garza is correct, then it would, but what we submit is that
in other words, you just take that part out of it, it doesn't say anything about delegation to the Attorney General. It seems like he's in violation of the statute.
Yeah, that seems to be what I was driving at.
Okay.
But on the other hand, what you seem to be saying is this is a different interpretation than the defendant, and that is you have the authority, you have the discretionary authority, first of all, to describe the requirements, applicability of requirements of the chapter to sex offenders convicted before the enactment of this chapter. Now, does that language, in my view, does that language have the legal effect of creating that first day upon which this statute becomes, quote, legally effective?
No, Your Honor, I submit that it does not. The effective date of SORNA was July 27, 2006 on all sex offenders, including pre-SORNA sex offenders. Even in the general application rule at 16913A specifically provides that a sex offender shall register and keep their registration current. And a sex offender under the statute is defined 16911 as any individual who was convicted of a sex offense. So our position is the effective date is effective date and active date of SORNA of July 27, 2006 to all sex offenders. The only thing that the provision in D did was allow the Attorney General the discretion to make specifics regarding the application of SORNA to pre-SORNA sex offenders, because as the court has recognized, some states, the states had different regulations regarding SORNA. Congress was likely concerned about sex offenders who were never registered under SORNA. Congress is likely concerned about, yes, Your Honor.
Question about where they are supposed to register. Is that in the statute?
I'm sorry?
Where they are supposed to register.
They're supposed to register.
Does the statute itself say that?
Yes.
Does it give the Attorney General the discretion to say where they may register differently from where those that are not covered under DC of the statute?
Well, they're supposed to register in the in the jurisdiction where they reside.
Well, I know, register within.
Police station or county clerk or something, what?
Oh, the particular place where?
Yes.
Well, the Attorney General was given general authority to issue guidelines and regulations.
Well, he could say, he could make it, he could say under that statute that to register with the Highway Patrol, and the statute under Section A requires registration with the Sheriff's Office. So the Attorney General under this statute has the authority to change the terms of registration and make it a crime what might not otherwise have been a crime because of improper registration.
The Attorney General, Your Honor, does have the authority to issue guidelines and implement regulations and rules.
So, I mean, even if this man was registered, as you claim he was.
He was registered.
He was with whom, I don't know, and you don't know.
He was, well, we know that in Texas that the local Texas authorities took him down. I'm not sure it's not in the
record. You don't know whether he was registered with the Sheriff's Office or with whom he was registered?
No, Your Honor, I don't have that.
Okay, and so he could come back and he could register with the Sheriff's Office in Baton Rouge, and then the Attorney General issues orders that says he's supposed to register with the Highway Patrol, and he would be in violation of law even though he was registered, because the Attorney General designated a different place for him to register. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, again, I submit, I mean, that I know that the attorney, I haven't read that exact provision in the final guidelines to see exactly what the extent of the Attorney General implemented with respect to the location.
Well, who, does the statute say with whom the individual sex offender is to register? Or
no.
Do they leave that to the Attorney General to decide that with respect to everybody? And not just the ones that can't comply as referred to in Section B.
No, Your Honor. I haven't seen in the statute where it directs the place that the person has, sex offender has to register. And again, I'm not sure what the Attorney General has provided, what information he has implemented regarding in the final guidelines regarding the location.
Well, that seems like that's almost a confession that there's no evidence here that this individual committed a crime.
No, SORNA requires, the statute says that SORNA requires the sex offender to register and to keep his registration in the jurisdiction where the offender resides. So if the And again, I'm not sure exactly what the final regulations say.
Every state will have different, every state that has a sex offender statute will have different places to register. He registered, as I understand the record, in Louisiana, I think either before he was let out of jail or right after that. And if I recall the, and Mr. Eberle can correct me if I'm wrong, but when he left, the day after CERNA was passed, he was required to register either with DPS in Texas or whatever, but he had registered in fact. And those issues are not really before us. The question is, what is the meaning of that subsection D, and whether or not, it seems to me, does that give a, quote, what I would call a new effective date to that statute? And I'm not even sure that it applies here, but it may.
Your Honor, we submit that, again, that section only applies to, as the title says, initial registration of sex offenders who are unable to comply with subsection B. The circuits are split. That subsection is ambiguous. And when you consider, and as the Supreme Court has said, when a statute is ambiguous, examine the subtitle and the legislative intent. And when you examine the subtitle, it makes it clear that the text that follow only deals with sex offenders who are not able to comply with the initial registration, which is unlike the defendant in this case. Those sex offenders who were unable to comply may not have been given notice of their obligation to register. Again, Congress was concerned with people who were never required to register. If the court accepts the defendant's view that the enactment date for him was when the Attorney General issued its guidelines, that contradicts the overall purpose of SONA. SONA, in Section 16901, Congress stated that SONA was created to protect the public from sex offenders and offenders against children and establish a comprehensive national system for the registration of those offenders. And before SONA, there was the Jacob Wetterling Act of 94, and since that time, there are national standards for sex offender registration, and states have their sex offender registration laws. But SONA was this comprehensive revision of those national standards, which were designed to strengthen and increase the effectiveness of the sex offender registration. It was to close the gaps and the loopholes which were existing in the pre-existing laws from which sex offenders would evade registration by moving from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Congress created this comprehensive scheme, and it doesn't make sense that they would leave it up to the Attorney General to make a decision whether SONA applied to pre-SONA sex offenders. A large number of those sex offenders would have probably already been registered in their state laws after the Jacob Wetterling Act. And with respect to a question that was raised, Judge Jones had a concern about in the Young case, the government, our position is that the Young case predated Carr, and since Young, the department's policy on this statute has been made clear. And if the interim ruling regarding retroactivity had been an issue in Young, we submit that the government's position probably would have been different.
Right. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Eberle.
I've been thinking about what the consequence of the 1969-13D being an unconstitutional delegation. And the suggestion was it would simply strike it, and then it would automatically then therefore apply to persons convicted prior to SORNA. But I think if it's an unconstitutional delegation, which I'm not sure is an issue in this case, but The intent is still there. And the intent was for the statute not to apply to pre-SORNA convictions at the time of its enactment. The fact that they might not have done it properly means it has to go back to Congress for them to fix it. I don't think we can just simply strike 1913D.
Well, you've not argued that.
The other point I wanted to make was, the government argued in Carr that Congress could not possibly have meant to exclude persons who traveled before the enactment date because it's not a comprehensive, it wouldn't be consistent with a comprehensive statute, and the Supreme Court held otherwise.
But, Mr. Everly, I want to make sure that I understand the record correctly. Clearly, he registered in Louisiana, and he cleared that, and this was before the 27th of July, 2006, and he clearly registered in Texas either the day, July 27th, or the day after July 27th, 28th of July, 2006.
What I was not recalling when I was up here the first time, I'm limited by a detailed factual basis.
That's right.
And that factual basis does not contain that latter fact, although that latter fact does appear in the government's brief, that he was brought the day after February 28th or whatever they said.
So you're saying it's not in the record?
I'm saying that it's not in the factual basis. I don't want to swear it's not in the record, but I do not recall that fact. Now, the government has cited the record, so it may be there.
The reason is that it may become important. Because if he registered after the 27th of July, then it seems to me that he registered after the effective act, he traveled after the effective date of the act, and he failed to register after the effective date of the act. And that poses a little bit different scenario than what you seem to be suggesting in this case.
Well, our point would remain that the statute didn't apply to him
because
he did not travel. Okay. Before that date, after that date. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. The court will now stand in recess.